Good afternoon, and I'd like to thank my fellow panelists for very great and provocative presentations before me. So today I'm going to be going over not just preliminary data and methodological considerations, but also some theoretical issues. The project has moved a little slower than I had anticipated, so we're going to go into a little bit more into some of the, the theory and the methodological considerations today. So the goals of this project is to study power and sexuality and health from the perspective of female sex workers. So really one of the program goals of this project is to really engage female sex workers at all stages of the research so that they feel more like partners and not like research subjects. It also further, this project will examine the role of community-initiated social organizations as potential mechanisms for addressing social inequalities. And one of the goals of this project is actually to compare those female sex workers that are organization members and those who are not to see if there's any differences in such things such as empowerment indicators and HIV prevention behaviors. So this project takes place in Tijuana, and just, so at UCLA, this is very close to our border, but it's just a city right across the border from San Diego. So why did I choose Tijuana for this project? First, Tijuana is the busiest land border in the world, which makes it a very important place to study border health. It's a popular sex tourism destination, and most of the sex tourists are from the United States, but they also come from other parts of the world, including Europe. It's the region in Mexico with the second highest rates of HIV, and this is only second to the Federal District of Mexico City. And then HIV/AIDS rates amongst female sex workers in this area is much higher than in the general population, both looking at the general population but also compared to female sex workers in other areas of Mexico. And further, it has one of the only community-initiated social organizations for female sex workers in Mexico. And what I mean by the concept of community-initiated social organizations is not organizations that simply provide services for female sex workers, but those organizations that were established by female sex workers themselves. So just to go over some brief background of HIV/AIDS in Tijuana, the number of infected adults is between the ages of 15 and 49 is about 1 in 125. This rate is about 3 times higher than the national average. This is the national Mexican average that I'm referring to. Somehow the hypothesized reasons for these high rates is the proximity to the United States, migration and population mobility because it is a border city, low levels of HIV/AIDS knowledge, increased substance use compared to other parts of Mexico, especially in injection drug use, and then, of course, the sex work industry. So this chart just compares HIV in amongst women in Mexico in general, HIV amongst female sex workers in Mexico in general, and then looking at these same two groups in Tijuana. So pink represents Mexico as a whole, and then the blue is looking at Tijuana. So as we can see, the HIV rate amongst all women in Mexico is pretty relatively low, especially compared to some other developing countries that have a very marked HIV epidemic, with it being less than 1%. Then amongst all female sex workers in Mexico, it's also under 1%, but still slightly higher. However, here we can highlight that the situation in Tijuana is a marked difference. Rates amongst women in general is above 1%, and then the rates amongst female sex workers in Tijuana is nearly 5%. So this shows that this is a very important public health issue that needs to be addressed. So now I'm going to go over some of the theoretical issues that I explore in this project. And a lot of times when we look at public health research and we see all these diagrams with arrows, we're implying causality and testing these particular associations. But that's actually not the purpose of this diagram. It's really just to provide a sort of a background theory that's sort of driving the research. So as we can see, in the first column we have indicating the marginalization of female sex workers and some of the concepts that I am exploring under this general topic. And this includes the sociocultural context, including gender norms and relationships of power. Relationships of power exist not just with clients, but with personal intimate relationships, family members, police officers, and other state regulatory agencies. Then there's the issue of economic options and deprivation. Of course, one of the topics of today's session is, whether sex work is voluntary and forced, but even if a woman volunteers into the sex work, it's all about how can we actually analyze the term volunteer because of the economic situation that they find themselves in. And then there's more structural level issues such as sexual and social inequalities that exist in multiple levels, and it's particularly wanted to highlight structural sexism. And then going on into the middle of the diagram, we're looking at the idea of social organizing and community mobilization, and this is through the organizations that I'm going to be analyzing in this study. and how this can hopefully lead to the empowerment of female sex workers and at multiple levels. And of course, you know, looking at the Latin American culture and the Mexican culture is very important to not just look at empowerment at the individual level, but also at the family, group, community, and social level. And hopefully this will then start challenging some of the issues that are on the in the original column of the marginalization, including challenging structural sexism. And then hopefully we're moving on to some mobilization for social change, so we're not just looking at empowering individuals and promoting HIV prevention amongst individual women, but at a much more macro level. And hopefully this will have positive effect on of sexual outcomes. This diagram just shows how where are some of these concepts coming from. These are a lot of theories that are sort of very much involved in the community health curriculum. And so looking at how theories are being adopted from the theory of gender and power, which includes concepts such as the social division of the sexual division of labor, the sexual division of power, and the concept of cathexics. It's drawing upon a lot of feminist issues. Of course, social capital with organization, looking at reciprocal relationships and non-hierarchical relationships, so equalizing power. And of course, drawing upon empowerment theories, feminist theories, again on the other side of the diagram, and community mobilization. Another way to look at this is, and the specific context of the female sex workers in Tijuana, is including the concept of borderlines in negotiations. Life at the border involves a lot of additional issues to just looking at gender norms, because they're, you know, for example, they're having to negotiate multiple cultures, and then also the issues of population mobility. So looking at the intersection of gender norms, power relationships, and border lives, looking at how this might have an effect on disparities in sexual autonomy and disparities in sexual health. But if we add the element of social organization participation, we're hoping to find increases in community and individual capacity, as well as empowerment, and these two, of course, are very related to each other, and hopefully this will lead to decreases in disparities in sexual autonomy and decreases in disparities in sexual health. So the methodological approach for this project, this is a multi-stage qualitative study, and I will go over the stages in just a minute. And basically, as I said in the beginning, I'm taking a bottom-up approach to really working from the female sex workers and involving them at every level of the project. Community involvement and collaboration is working with three groups primarily. There is the Binational Center for Human Rights in Tijuana, and this is a group that has worked with many, many marginalized groups in Tijuana and providing capacity building and tools to help other groups create their own organizations so that those organizations may be sustained. Then there's the Maria Magdalena Vanguard Organization of Free Women, which is the community-initiated organization of sex workers that I have been referring to. And then finally, there's the Tijuana Municipal Health Center, known as the Departamento de Control Sanitario, which is where all female sex workers must go for regular medical exams. So this diagram represents my research process. Above the dotted line is the phase that I'm currently in, which is the formative phase. And we're going to be doing key informant interviews with the director of the Binational Center for Human Rights, with leaders of the organization, and as well with community members, female sex workers that are not members of the organization. So this allows from the very early stage of the project to really get information from multiple levels and not just go from the top down. And then using all of this information to sort of create the focus group instrument, so using each level to inform the next one, and that way the female sex workers themselves can feel like they are actually participating in the creation of the project. Then the main phase of the project will involve semi-structured in-depth interviews, and there will be interviews done with both groups, that being organization members and non-organization members. And this chart just sort of briefly describes what intended sample sizes will be. So at the key informant interview level, we'll have about 2 to 3 key informant interviews with organization members and the same amount with non-organization members. And then going down to focus groups, there'll probably be about 2 per group. And then finally down to the semi-structured interviews, 10 to 20 per group. And of course, this, you know, because it's a qualitative study, this is just sort of soft numbers. We continue until we get to the point of saturation. So now to just briefly go over some preliminary findings. Female sex workers in Tijuana, their ages are estimated to range between 14 and into the 50s. It's hard to tell on what the youngest ages are, because most of those who are under 18 are not registered, so it's hard to get that kind of information. And this project will focus on only those who are 18 and above, primarily for legal reasons of getting into the field to do the research. Sex workers in Tijuana are both street-based and establishment-based, and this project will primarily focus on those that are street-based. Clients are both foreign and local men, I mean not just men from Tijuana, but men from all over Mexico. And then the Mexican, the female sex workers are also both Mexican and foreign born, but those who are street based are primarily Mexican. However, they are not primarily from Tijuana. They are from areas such as Puebla, Sinaloa, and Tlaxcala. Now, to show you a map here so you can get kind of a more visual picture of where these women are coming from. So with the exception of Sinaloa, the areas that they're coming from are actually pretty far from Tijuana, so they are traveling quite far to be involved in the sex work industry. And some of them are on their way to the U.S., and others do just stay in Tijuana. So many of the female sex workers, especially the street-based ones, do deny that they have what in Mexico is known as the padrote, or the pimp, whereas those who are establishment-based will not use such a term, but they do, you know, it is more obvious that they are working under managers or bosses. And a lot of times, the reason that the term of padrote is not really accepted along the street is because oftentimes it is their primary partner or their husband that is serving this role. So even though it is their primary partner, they're still, you know, going through a lot of the abuses that, you know, the more stereotypical picture of the pimp. Further, women will not respond to terms such as prostituta, which is the Spanish term for prostitute, and that is seen in many, many projects that's come out in other female sex worker communities. They use terms such as trabajadoras sexuales, which is the equivalent of sex worker, and also sexo servidoras, as sex servers. So just as we were looked at in some of the other presentations, that sex work in Tijuana does have a semi-legal status. So it's only tolerated within what's called the zonas de tolerancia, which are similar to such as a red light district. All female sex workers must be registered, and to do this they must go into the clinic, and they have to submit a bunch of paperwork to be able to get all their information posted, and then they actually get a little card that looks like a license, and it has a barcode and it can be scanned, and all their information can be obtained from this card. Currently there is about 7,300 female sex workers registered. There's no way to estimate those who are not. And most of those who are not are probably those who are not legally in Mexico and those who are underaged. This little registration card is a valid working permit, and to be able to keep it valid, you have to go in for regular health exams. And there's actually a special task force that goes in and checks whether you have your valid permit by just having a little scanner right on the street, and they can scan it. And this is known as Inspección y Vigilancia Municipal. And just to go into a little bit more detail about their health exams, they are required to be tested for STDs monthly and for HIV every 4 months. And even though this is a required health exams, and some prior reports of sex work in Tijuana have reported that free health care is provided to them, this is actually incorrect. According to clinic directors, female sex workers are required to pay for their health exams. And unfortunately, there is no way to track those female sex workers who do not come in for their medical exams. So even though they have all this data on these individuals, if they don't come in for a month, they're not going out to look for them. They're not doing any outreach to bring them in. And one of the main reasons is that when they don't come in is that, you know, they've already left Tijuana. So moving on to some methodological considerations that are important to consider here is community access. One is it's very hard to get into the community, not just to have them accept you, but to find out how are you going to even just start the project. And what I've done to be able to address this issue is to collaborate with these multiple organizations. So collaborating with the Binational Center for Human Health, for Human Rights, with the Organization of Sex Workers themselves, as well as with the Municipal Clinic. There's also the issue of community buy-in, which I see is slightly different. So it's not just physically getting into the community, but having them accept me as a researcher. So they need to accept the purpose of the research. So even though I'm coming in with certain issues that I want to address in this project, through the formative phase of research, I really want to come up with, have them maybe bring up some other issues that they want, that they think, you know, because they will be able to change my opinion about maybe the direction of some of my main research questions, and that way make them actual partners in the research. And then also there's this issue of safe places for interviews. Female sex workers will not participate in the research. Obviously, first of all, if they don't feel that it's a safe place, it needs to be free from coercion, obviously. And then also further, we need to have that it's safe from bosses or primary partners, police, and other female sex workers. And what the plan is, as the project is moving along, is that for those who are organization members, they do have their own organizational space, so the project will be, so interviews will be conducted in that space. And then for those who are not organization members, they have to, since they do regularly go into the clinic, I have collaborated the clinic to get my own office space, and it's a space that they have a very nice space, so they have rooms, for health education, and then they have other rooms that I can then have a safe place to conduct these interviews. The final issue is time to interview. Sex workers will be reluctant to participate because every minute that they spend involved in my project will be a minute that they don't have to work and earn income, and a lot of these women depend on their daily income to be able to support themselves and their families. So to be able to do this, through the key informant agents and focus groups, we'll first find what is considered reasonable time for participation, and then also obviously pay them compensate them monetarily for their participation. So if their participation is an hour, pay the average rate that's going on for the hour. In addition, small gifts will be given, such as free condoms as well as various makeup items. So just to briefly go over some study limitations, the structure of this project shows that it doesn't have a probability sample. There's some issues of research exhaustion on the part of female sex workers. Quite a few projects have been done in terms of female sex workers in Tijuana, but I think that I can sort of lessen the effect of this study limitation because I'm taking a very different approach and not really coming in with this all-knowing researcher looking down on them type of approach. Also, there's potential for social desirability in interviews. Female sex workers might provide answers that they think I want to hear rather than reflecting upon actual realities. There's some issues of culture and social differences between the researcher and the participants, but because I am working with them in multiple stages, and also the organizations that I'm working with will be reviewing instruments to make sure, to ensure cultural competence, hopefully this limitation also will be properly addressed. Unfortunately, there's only one person to code and analyze the data. That's the nature of being a grad student. That's just the way life is. And then, of course, we're always left with research that, there's only a limit to what we can look at, and there may be some issues that affect sexuality and health that are not involved in my project, but actually are involved in some of these major issues that are in their lives. Just finally wanted to show you some pictures to sort of give you a lay of the land of where this project is being conducted. This is the famous arch in Tijuana. The clinic where the female sex workers must go for the regular exams is actually just right down the road from it. So if you're staring straight at this arch and you turn around, walk down about a half block, you will see the clinic, and it's called the Departamento de Control Sanitario. This project has been supported by the UCLA School of Public Health Global Health Training Program, as well as the University of California Quality and Graduate Education Grant. I'd just like to thank my doctoral committee at UCLA, Dr. Carr, Dr. Mirsky, and Dr. Kagawa Singer, and then from the from Women's Studies, Sandra Harding, as well as my collaborators in Mexico, Victor Clark Arfalo, who is the director of the Binational Center for Human Rights, Manuel Mayor Noriega, who is the director of the Departamento de Control Sanitario, and I'd also like to thank Jennifer Toller-Raskin, Chriselle Molina, and Pamela Stoddard for their advice and support during this project.